Hi, Liz.
And Rick.
Good, how are you?
Hey, Steven.
How are you? We will go ahead and get started. I just want to get confirmation that we are online and that we're recording. All right. This is the July 6th meeting of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. The first order of business is to take roll. Judge Boris.
Present by phone.
Alan Carlson.
Here.
Sherry Carter.
Here.
Jake Chatters.
Here.
Judge Cope.
I'm here.
Judge Conklin.
Here.
Judge DeSantos.
Here.
Rick Feldstein.
Here.
Rebecca Fleming. Kimberly Flinner.
Here by phone.
Judge Gall. Judge Good.
Here.
Jose Guillen.
Here.
Judge Harmon.
Here.
Judge Holland.
Here.
Judge Johnson.
Here.
Judge Kuhl.
Here.
Sean Landry.
Here.
Judge Lee.
Here.
Judge Maragondi. Gonda. Stephen Nash.
Here.
Debbie Norrie.
Here.
Mike Roddy.
Here.
Judge Slough.
Present.
Judge Smith.
Here.
Mary Beth Todd.
Here.
Kim Turner.
Here.
Chris Volkers. David Yamasaki.
Here.
Anyone else on the phone that I did not catch the first time around? All right, we do have a quorum, and I'll update our attendance as people arrive. I want to thank everybody for cutting short your holiday weekend. You were probably real excited to have Friday off, and then last night probably went, oh, I'm flying to San Francisco. We're driving to San Francisco. So thank you all for being here today. It's a fairly easy agenda. I think we'll get through it pretty timely. The first order, or second order of business, is to approve the minutes from our June 2nd meeting. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Judge Harmon moves.
Judge Smith seconds.
Any discussion about the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. I would note that we have not received any public comment, either in writing or request to speak today. So the first item on our agenda is a budget update. There are no materials for this agenda item. We are at item number one, and we have Zlatko Theodorovic, who is present to give that update for us.
Yes, good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining. Did a couple of more dings. I heard maybe folks have joined since we took roll, so if you've done that, please announce yourselves for the record. Anybody? Okay. So if you were able to listen to the council meeting of last week, was it last week? Martin provided an update in terms of the budget actions that were included by the administration and the legislature for the branch, and sort of overall, generally, sort of positive movement for the branch. You know, obviously we're always looking for more resources, but I'll just go sort of a highlight things that we've all discussed and been aware of since the May revision changes or updates. We have the $90.6 million for court operations, which represents a 5% increase, up to $66.2 million to address our shortfall in our trial court trust fund revenues. And that is good in so much as that the incremental reduction in our revenues were addressed by the administration in the budget, but still leaves, unfortunately, that issue of the 22.7 that we were wrangling with last year and ultimately did come to a recommendation that the council approve the methodology for that going forward. I think of very good news in terms of court-appointed dependency accounts. You know, we've been advocating for $33 million for the last 2 years, and while not what we had looked for in terms of the total dollars, $11 million that we'll be discussing today, is a good step forward, but represents an important investment in this area. Our employee-related benefit changes, getting back some of the money that was taken in last year's May revision to the $22 million that we've already discussed, and then we'll be recommending an allocation methodology for the most recent cost changes. So again, we're sort of not losing, we're gaining a bit back, which was good. Prop 47, which we'll be, again, we'll be discussing today, $27 million is welcome resources given the sort of tremendous workload that Prop 47 has brought to the trial courts. We have funding for judicial salary increases that already occurred, which is identified in the memo, but there's been some confusion and questions about, well, what does that mean for the 15-16 fiscal year? And there's a 2.48% increase new on top of what was last year's increase for judicial officers. And so that'll also be coming as part of the budget process as we build it for 15-16. $5.5 million for a land-WAN. Again, that was something that the administration supported and the legislature remained in the budget. An increase that came in the budget for us was $1.3 million from the Recidivism Reduction Fund. That was an important increase for us because it was able to get a few more courts that had been left out of the last funding process. So I think it's important funding for us. Budget deals with security as it's related to sheriff provided security, $2 million in the general fund, and that's a process where courts who have increased costs with new facilities are able to request with their counties additional resources. That was good. Traffic amnesty, is going to be a major workload for the branch, and we were successful in getting some substantial and significant changes from what was originally proposed in the May revision by the administration in terms of cost recovery, some greater flexibility, and there's a lot of work being done by Mary Beth and Rick and staff to sort of push back on the Department of Finance. So that was good for us to get that at least in a better place. We knew we weren't going to get out from underneath the amnesty, but in terms of its provisions and its management, October 1st is well on its way here, and we have quite a bit of work to get you all ready and the county's ready to manage that with all its unique provisions in terms of income and whether or not you're eligible for the 50% reduction or the 80% reduction, the payment plans, and all of that. So we've got a lot of work to do, and we've just started that already. Fee increase from a few years ago has been extended to June 30th, 2018. That represented almost $37 million of revenues coming into the trial court trust fund to support base allocations. So it's good that we continue that revenue, but obviously we prefer that we get the general fund rather than looking to users of the branch and the courts to pay for access. And so in terms of the overall budget, again, it was a good step forward. We're not entirely clear in terms of what's the administration's budget plan for 16-17 and ongoing, since they made no commitments or comments like they had done last year as far as the 5% over 2 years. But we're working on our BCPs. We took them to the council last week to discuss, and in support of those, and we're working through the summer to bring them back to you for you able to provide a prioritization to the council so we can submit those to the Department of Finance in the beginning of September. Yes, Sherry.
I can wait till you're finished.
That's sort of it now, as we sort of transition to the next process.
Okay, I was curious about the BCP process. I understand that various ideas get generated from different areas, mm-hmm. and heard that there was as many as 34 BCP ideas that had been generated, and it surprised me a little bit because when we looked at the list, there was like 9 or 8 or... So I was just kind of curious if you could help me understand, maybe others already know, when those BCP ideas get developed, how are they prioritized so that if it's something for You know, I think we had thought, we're stood good, that 80% of WAFM was one and the interpreter. So we saw that list. But how does that is there a group that looks at the 34 in total to help identify if you have to push for one or two, which one should be pushed?
Yeah, the council is the entity that will.
They do that?
Yeah. The Department of Finance in the past allowed the BCP to be submitted within section and priority, and so there wasn't a relative prioritization across the branch, and now their systems require them to be ordered 1, 2, X,
so
whatever
it is,
right, so, and a number of those ones on that list that you've heard about are capital related, so they're not prioritized in the same way. They have their own funding streams and structures, and so the facility construction side is on that list, but it's not part of those that are prioritized for the support. You know, we talked about local assistance and support and construction.
I think that's partially true. I would disagree slightly, but I don't get the process as well as you do. And that is that if judicial council staff has to support some over others, even if they're different funding streams like facilities and operations, if it boils down to the legislature and the governor supporting, I'm going to give you $20 million, decide where it's going, regardless of which pot, you know,
yeah,
we're still competing.
But technically, capital construction is submitted to two different sides of the Department of Finance, and they go through their own process. Capital has a five-year plan that goes behind it, and so that process is absolutely on a different track, and they aren't competing funds, per se, whereas you know, all the support items and the local assistance items are on another side of the house and considered by that group that we tend to work with on the issues that you deal with on a daily basis. So that's the are there any more questions? Yes, Kim.
So I know that in the past, A&E had a role in the BCP vetting and recommendation process.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I'm on A&E, and I'm trying to remember if we actually looked at a list of proposals or ideas early on, or if we just looked at them after they were developed, as you know, and I think it's the latter. So, so does A&E have a role mm-hmm. in looking at the 1 through 34 list?
They would. Their charge is to look at anything that impacts the judicial council staff budget.
Okay.
So anything. So if there's a trial court priority that has like for example, the language access plan has some things where the judicial council are doing things, we would be taking that to them, notwithstanding what was already discussed in terms of full disclosure of items.
Got it.
But if there's something that's purely trial court that doesn't impact the judicial council budget, then that isn't something that's reported to A&E. So that's their limited role. But ultimately, the council would see the entire list.
Thank you.
Sure.
Alan. Yeah, this is Alan. So if some of those 34, for example, are we want this amount of money for converting B3 and this amount for the CMS courts and then this amount for fixing the or increasing the number of courts that are using the CCPUR, would those kind of be lumped together by somebody as one possibly and going onto a list instead of three or four different ones?
The technology ones, as an example, are still the Budget Advisory Committee asked the Technology Committee to look at technology issues and is coming back eventually with what those prioritized items would be. I mean, if there's some sense that things can be packaged better, then we can think about how that's done. But generally, discrete items. You know, we don't just say, here's everything for the trial courts. They have their unique needs, and ICP gets unruly if we try to do everything in one. But.
Something Sherry said, I don't know, did DOF or the governor ever say, here's $20 million, what do you want to spend it on? Or do you say, here's the five things, and they say, okay, we'll give you $5.5 for LANWAN. Isn't it more, they look at what we want, and then they think of...
Yeah, as of late, it's been specific items. I mean, when we had Sal, that was an amount, and then it was us to the branch to allocate those resources. And the 5% over the last 2 years hasn't been, you know, dedicated to any particular usage by the council. But there was no, so that is sort of the here's an amount of money, but we still pursue individual DCPs, and they can, you know, they make recommendations up or down to the governor on whether, you know, LANWAN should be in or security should be in. So in theory, those stand on their own as individual issues and on their merits get evaluated from my experience, it wasn't a, let's spend X amount of money on the branch, and then what does it mean in terms of their priorities? Anybody else? Anybody on the phone with questions? All right, very good.
We will move on to item two. Before I do that, I'll update our attendance. We do have some of our advisory members here. Of course, you've just heard from Zlatko. We also have got Kurt Soderlin is present. Stephen Chang is present. Is there anyone else on the phone who I did not catch when we went through attendance? All right, thank you. The next item two, is allocation of Prop 47 funding for fiscal year 15-16. It is an action item, and the materials can be found on page 50, beginning on page 55 of your packet. And this will be presented by Judge Boris by phone, as well as David Yamasaki and Patrick Ballard, his staff, to the and staff from the Criminal Justice Program is present as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Earl, members. This, as Judge Earl indicated, relates to the Criminal Justice Realignment Subcommittee. You may recall that the subcommittee was created a few years ago, as a result of the Criminal Justice Realignment Act of 2011. This subcommittee was asked to look at the additional funding that was earmarked by the governor in his budget as a result of the enactment of Prop 47. The amount of money that the governor had set aside and it was recently adopted amounts to $26.9 million. And both Judge Boris and I convened a conference call that took place on May 5th. The membership of the committee is contained in the materials starting on page 55. And we assembled four different options for your consideration. One of the issues that we faced in looking at this particular topic was the expeditious nature in which this particular proposition was enacted. It was voted in by the voters in November and became operative the next day. And it's taken a bit of time for all of the courts and counties to get ramped up to deal with the workload that we were facing. And what we've noticed is that everybody is approaching this at different speeds because there is a great deal of interaction that is required with the local justice partners, the DA's office, and public defenders, and everybody is approaching it at different paces in many respects. And as a result, we wanted to take a look at a couple of different areas that was very helpful in examining how the realignment funds should be most appropriately distributed. And so one of the things that we examined was the number of petitions that were being filed in each of the respective courts. And as you can see in the materials, there was a huge focal point in the number of petitions as a result of individuals facing a reduction in their underlying charges that reduce the felonies to misdemeanors, but also the number of petitions that were being filed to bring back cases that would be subject to a reduction as well. So we wanted to take a look at the number of petitions that were filed, and since there was a tremendous impact to cases that had been filed and disposed of many years earlier, we wanted to also take a look at the number of filings. And there seemed to be a huge impact on old violations that have been, you know, completed. And so we wanted to take a look at the number of petitions that were filed as well as the number of felony cases that were filed. And that was just one way to look at look at a surrogate for what potentially each of the courts would end up seeing. So if you look on page 56, I wanted to talk to you about the different options. Option one was consideration of allocating the entire $26.9 million based on petitions and reclassifications that took place between November 5 and May 31. We were able to, with the support of the JC staff, capture the workload in those particular categories for that period of time. But we also took a look at the filings that took place for the past 10 years. The idea being you would distribute the monies half based on the petitions and then half based on the felony filings, and that was described in option number one. The option number two relates to making two half-year allocations using Prop 47 petitions and then felony filings. So you'll see there we wanted to take a look at, again, dividing the money into two blocks so that we would be able to capture the workload thus far from November to May, but also use those same variables in distributing the second half of the 26.9, keeping in mind that many courts are seeing increases in these categories right now. So we wanted to make sure that we had the most current information. And that is under option number two. The third option is what the subcommittee actually is recommending, and that is between November and May, we are seeing an increase in the number of petitions that are being filed, and we're capturing the felony workload for that period of time, so we'll be able to use those two key variables, petitions and workload. But in option number 3B, the recommendation was to allocate the second half of the monies based on the actual petitions that are being filed between June and November, so that courts would have an ample time to, prepare and have an idea to determine what kind of staff they would need to support this additional workload. So option number three is a hybrid, using the petitions and the filings for the distribution of the first half. The second half, again, would be looking exclusively at the number of petitions. And a quick survey of different courts, we were able to find out that we're starting to see the counties and courts the process, the petitions, and that gives us a really good idea of the workload each of the courts are experiencing. But the other benefit of that is it gives us a very accurate measurement, as good as we can hope for, in presenting to the legislature the need to continue the funding, not based on a projection, but actual petitions that each of the courts are seeing in this particular area. So that is option number three. The fourth option is simply setting aside a reserve of about $100,000 for courts that may not have seen the workload just yet, but also giving them an opportunity to apply for some additional funding to support whatever workload they're going to be seeing between now and perhaps December. But I think November. But I think the idea is to try to be as inclusive and cautious in distributing the money, but also recognizing the need to back it up with data in our effort to seek additional funding on an ongoing basis. Many of the committee members believe that this is something that will not be resolved in a one-year period, but something that we'll probably see for at least a couple, 3 years going forward. Any questions?
Judge Slapp.
So, David, a question I have is when you say, if in case any court has yet to see an increase or of their workload or a change in their workload, can you give me an example of what you're thinking about? Because it seems like we all have seen something, maybe not exactly the same.
We took this proposal as a way to address what we saw with realignment. Some of the courts had very few filings, and we ended up probably in the second year distributing some additional money to some of the smaller courts. They don't have quite the volume or the activity of review, and we just wanted to make sure that that money was available for those courts, again, the smaller ones for the most part, that may require some additional funding. And of course, it sits there, and if it turns out that the money is not being used, then this body could perhaps consider distributing it in its entirety.
Judge Good?
David, is the idea to allocate based on the number of petitions filed in that six-month period?
For the second half?
Yes.
Yes.
Because what strikes me about the numbers is that it looks like some counties, for example, San Diego has this incredible spike.
Right.
It may have been the culture there that they filed a whole bunch of petitions all at once, but they're going to have to be working the backload off. The backlog off, and if it's based on the number of petitions in 6 months, they won't have any new petitions, but they're going to have this large backlog. And have you talked about how to account for that kind of phenomenon?
The interesting part of that, Judge Good, is that we wanted to try to encompass or set a mechanism to recognize those jurisdictions that have this huge number going in at the beginning. So that's why we wanted to look at petitions and filings. Those courts that did not have a lot of petitions were able to at least look at the filings for the first half of the year. And of course, many courts have already been seeing huge increases in workload. So we wanted to make sure that there was a resource available to them. And so by looking at just the petitions, it kind of alerts all of the jurisdictions. And certainly in talking to many of the jurisdictions, that petitions really has to be the focal point going forward. It at least alerts them that this is the most practical way of measuring workload in terms of distributing the money.
Mike Roddy.
You know, this is one of those that's really frustrating because we literally have no control. In our jurisdiction, they file 3,000 cases a week. They will be filing, by their estimate, 3,000 cases a week for the next year. So I'd love to see a diminishment, a reduction, but the local culture driven by our justice partners really is going to dictate how we respond. I like the idea that at least it's a balancing act. I think the 100,000 reserve, particularly for small courts, is important. But I guess it highlights how hostage we are to our justice partners. I mean, we can't explain it, makes no sense, but that's the way they're, and I think each jurisdiction is going to have to contend with that. Maybe there's a different way to do the funding, but I also think we've got to continue to fight for something going forward, because I do think the effects of this will continue for more than just 1 year.
Kim Turner, and then Judge Cope.
I also think that the impact of this will probably span a couple of fiscal years, but I actually have a different view on this $100,000 holdback. And you may recall the last time we had a Budget Advisory Committee meeting, I was also arguing against these $100,000 holdbacks because I think they're administratively burdensome for whoever, the JC staff that have to keep track of it. And in this case in particular, we already have the data by the time we are distributing the money. It's one thing when you have some uncertainty into the future about, you know, what the data is going to tell you and you hold back some money to cover that. But in this case, if I'm reading the proposal correctly, we would be looking at June 1st through November 30th data and distributing the money in 2 months later. And so I am not a huge fan of these small, I mean, it's a drop in the bucket of the $27 million that you're going to distribute to hold back $100,000 for some unforeseen situation. And again, since we're looking at data in our rearview mirror, I just don't see the necessity for it.
Jeff Koch. I'm sorry, one second. David, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah, if I could. The $100,000 collectively is not necessarily a big chunk of money, but with respect to realignment, some of the courts actually benefited substantially just by receiving $4,000. I mean, some of the smaller courts have very, very small budgets, and certainly with the diminishment of the reserve, they don't have the capacity to, you know, pick up a $4,000 or $5,000 expenditure. So the money, for all intents and purposes, isn't really going to go anywhere. But we obviously are trying to help even the smallest courts out that could really benefit from a few thousand dollars, because there are some associated expenses that they would otherwise be required to pick up with no funding. And so, again, the money will be there, presumably for distribution to exhaust it if need be, but we want to obviously be sensitive to those situations.
Can I ask a follow-up, Judge Earl? Yes. So I guess my follow-up question then is, what criteria will be used to determine that the $100,000 ought to get distributed? So if we've counted all the filings, but there's some unforeseen workload or unforeseen additional cost or whatever, will there be an application process? Will the courts have to come pitch their case to the Budget Advisory Committee? How will all the mechanics of that work? Because that's where I think, you know, maybe I'm getting old and cranky, but I'm at the point where I just think all these very small set-asides create a lot of issues for, you know, for us in terms of the accounting and keep it from being kind of a clean process. And I'm curious about how much workload is going to go into distributing this $100,000 down the road if there has to be some big front-end logistical process that goes along with it.
Well, the beauty of it is that isn't going to be a complicated process. Looking at how the realignment subcommittee dealt with it the last go-round with the realignment workload, it was the same criteria that applied to all of the courts, filings and petitions and perhaps workload perhaps that everybody is being the criteria is being used on all of the courts. So my thinking is that it could go back to the subcommittee to look at the same thing, petitions. Let's say a small jurisdiction didn't have any petitions filed, and then all of a sudden they get, I don't know, a number of them. They would use that same criteria presumably and then present it back for approval.
Yeah, Judge Earl, this is Judge Boris. I think that's where we were coming from with respect to that, and that is the unforeseen things. The 10-year average of statewide felony filings covers a 10-year average in each county. The problem is that in L.A. County, part of those 10-year average cases could be serious felonies that wouldn't fall under Prop 47. Perhaps in some smaller courts, they would be more drug cases that might fall under Prop 47. So the 10-year average was just kind of a, let's go there, and maybe some of the smaller counties will have some things come up that won't fit into the 10-year averaging process. And again, as David said, some things may be dropped late. I know some courts, I think it's critical that all courts try to track their petition. Some courts were going by way of an oral petition, but they were able to capture that it was being made under Prop 47 in their case management system. Other courts mandated their justice partners to file a petition, a written petition, which obviously is easier to count because there it is sitting there in front of you. So there were these little twists that were happening in each county. David made a comment when we were on the realignment committee. The Department of Corrections said in some counties they never had parole hearings, and therefore they were shown to have zero need for any AB 109 money. And it turned out, had we not set aside some small amount, that there were a couple counties that ended up doing parole hearings that came back to the AB 109 realignment committee, and we gave them some money for the out of the holdback in order to pay for the costs of doing parole hearings that they were not supposed to have at all inside their county.
Judge Cope, and then Jake.
Well, I think Kim Turner said everything I had to say, although she said much better. The only I guess the only thing I might add is that, you know, this having that $100,000 will not only involve formulating a process for how to make a claim on it, but also formulating a process for when and how to distribute what's left at the end of the year. There's also that 2% reserve that seems like it would be available for those kinds of emergencies. So I'm fully in favor of the proposal itself. I think it was 3A, but I'm not so sure about $100,000. It's not a lot of money in the greater scheme of things, but I think it's one of several reserves that we've held back. We've done it in dependency council. We've done it for just these other areas, and I think that's a good point. We ought to stop doing that.
Jake.
All right, so I have two items. I'll start with the easy one first, which is this is proposing an allocation in January. And my concern there is that made sense. That's consistent with what we did with AB 109. But in this context, this is one-time money. And so that means if an allocation is being made in January, a court's not going to know and be able to plan for it until late in January, leaving only 5 months in order to expend those funds. So I guess my question is, was there any thought given to moving that up even 1 month, which I realize gives you only 5 months of filings data, but then a decision is made in December and you're going into January knowing what to expect. Because my only concern is that's not a lot of time to react. If there's a big shift in your petitions and you're going to have to staff up, and you don't know that until January. Now, by the time they're filled, you're talking March, and are you really going to be able to effectively deal with it? So I just make that as a point.
That's a very good point, Jake. And originally, we're looking at January for the period of time, and recognizing the limited amount of time to actually spend that money, proposal or the discussion focus on shortening the time to the data through November. So although it may not give you as broad of a picture, it at least gives the courts some idea of the type of money that they potentially would be seeing, and give this advisory committee and the judicial council to then act on adopting whatever the proposal would be. So we tried to shorten it as much as possible, but we also wanted to recognize that there are some courts that are starting to get in a very active processing cycle, where these counties have hired a bunch of people to review the proposals and filing petitions. So what's the perfect, you know, block of time? I don't know if that there is something that's going to address every problem or challenge, but we wanted to at least get as clear a picture as possible on the actual workload and then make that recommendation. So, I mean, that's a partial answer to your question, I guess.
Yeah, Judge, this is Judge Borskin. Jake, we actually at one point were talking about making the distribution in March of 2016, and that exact concern that you just raised came to us, so we pushed it back actually to January of 2016. And I think with the concept that either the CEOs or the PJs and in conjunction with the Judicial Council staff can help any court with any sort of financial planning that would need to be done. But we actually did think of that and moved it back from like a March distribution of 2016 to January 2016.
So the second piece I wanted to pick up on something that Judge Boris had said, which is, I think we all need to be aware, and I'm sure we are thinking about our local courts, but what does some of these large variances mean in terms of petitions? And there's a lot of variables that go into that. There's no, you know, clear answer to that. But when you see percentages that vary, I'm going to pick on a couple, right? So LA is about 23% of felony filings, but only 15% of the petitions. Now, that could be that people aren't filing many of them, or they're waiting to file, or it could mean that relatively within their population of felonies, there is a lower percentage of drug and theft cases as a whole. Conversely, if you're looking at San Diego, or it goes the opposite direction, it could just be that they're very active at filing all of them. But it also could mean that proportionally a larger percentage of overall felony filings are drug and theft cases. And I bring that up only as we look to next year, and as we all deal with our filings that are changing in the current year, new filings that then go into what is our funding model. We all need to be very careful about looking at what does our future look like. Because if suddenly, and I'm not saying this is the case, right, but if in San Diego 25% of their cases just went from felonies to misdemeanors, that is a pretty big change in the model. I'm not saying that's what's happening. There's a lot of variables.
That's what's happening, Jay.
It could be. But I just, you know, I don't want to, we just need to be aware of that. That's going to be a pretty big change for all of us. And looking ahead 6 months from now and trying to plan for what does that mean as everyone's relative share, if this is indicative of what those new filings look like, there is going to be some change in people's relative share of the overall statewide funding. So I think we need to be aware of that. We're not going to know until the numbers get audited, but just want to put that out there.
And I think, this is David, and I think the points that you've raised are issues that the subcommittee also was considering. We don't have a, I mean, we had to implement this new process late in the game. There wasn't a lot of guidance that we could provide in formulating how best to come up with a formula. So we took what we had. We want to obviously recognize that some jurisdictions are just now getting their hands around processing the requests that are coming in and resulting in the filing of petitions. So that's part of the reason why we're proposing that it be distributed in two chunks. One, based on what we can surmise and have experienced through May, and then perhaps a different variable to capture workload and how the money should be distributed. So rather than distributing it all in one approach, again, we wanted to approach this somewhat incrementally so that we can, you know, distribute the money based on some specific details.
I have Debbie Norrie and then Alan Carlson.
I wanted to go back to the $100,000 reserve. Smaller courts, I think, may have already seen their peak in the filing of these petitions. They don't have organized bar associations or groups that go after this particular subject. And so I think, I agree with Kim, that we just ought to distribute the $100,000. Smaller courts don't hire extra staff to do this. They absorb it in their workload. And I, as a very small court, would find a hard time getting an influx of cash at the end of the fiscal year and my 1%. I could lose what I was given.
Thank you. Alan Carlson.
This conversation sounds a little bit like we don't think we're going to get any more money for this. I mean, if you say, well, if we've got stuff still filing in January and February and it's peaking in courts then, whereas it peaked in some other places earlier, that's our argument to go back to the governor and the legislature and say, hey, it's still there. The bulge hasn't gotten through the snake yet. Give us some more money for 16, 17, and then we can allocate out money based on what's come up later on. And I think that takes care of both the problem of using numbers only through November, because if there's still a lot of filings, we can get some more money and do it the next year. And I think it also takes away the $100,000 problem. I don't think you need to do $100,000 if we think we're going to get more money. We can always cover that in the next batch of money that comes through. It's all money in retrospect anyway. I mean, LA and San Diego and Orange have done hundreds of filings with no money this year. So we're getting kind of paid back in a sense, and I think it's going to be that way all the way through. So I would say let's do what we're talking about here, forget the $100,000, and then keep collecting those numbers to show the governor and the legislature. You got to put in more money for next year. We're still dealing with these things.
And Alan, this is Monica, just so you know that the Department of Finance supported, an albeit a much smaller amount, but recognizing that there was, they looked at it 3 years, but two fiscal years here where we're talking $7.6 million, they would have liked to have budgeted for 16 and 17. So I think the data would support that and sort of counter the LAO. They say they support it, but they want to see the data. Yeah. So I think that's
It's there. Mm-hmm. Kim Turner.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, we're in year one of a 3-year, voter initiative. And so I'm sure, and so Zlatko, you pretty much said what I was going to say, which is that the DOF needs to be aware that the window is open and it's open wide for 3 years. So we shouldn't be solving this problem 1 year at a time, perhaps, but understand that we are going to have money for next year and the year after that if the petitions keep rolling in.
I have Sherry Carter and then Rick Feldstein.
Well, I was just going to ask Alan if he would convert his comment to a motion. I would second it, and that would be to go with the recommendation of option 3, but less the $100,000 holdback.
If we're at the point of making motions, yes.
So you're moving, well, at this point, you're just moving option
just
three.
Just 3A and...
And B, without reference. Because option four is on its own.
Right, not a second.
And not,
Right, 1 second. Rick Feldstein.
Well, and I agree with the deletion of the $100,000, and particularly because if you think about the micro courts, we established a floor for them through WAFM, and you would think that if they have some increased caseload, that that may be handled through that floor as opposed to a special fund.
Any other thoughts? All right, I'll call the question. Then we have a motion and a second to approve option three. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any other motions? We're... All right, thank you. I think the next agenda item is yours as well, David, and that is item three, criminal justice realignment allocation for fiscal years 15 and 16, also presenting with Judge Boris. And the materials relevant to this item can be found beginning on page 62 of your packet.
Thanks, Judge. And Judge Boris was going to present this particular item.
All right.
Right. As you can see in the materials, we have kind of, what I want to say, have gotten our arms around the AB 109 kind of statistics for a little bit anyway, and that is we first, the realignment committee, we first, when we had to address this, we basically were living off of a statistical sheet that was given to us by the Department of Corrections. And as I mentioned, it was not accurate, at least as to what the courts were actually doing. So we went ahead and devised a scheme, a distribution allocation method that you can see in the background materials that covered kind of the quick hit to help the courts, at least on the Department of Correction sheet, showed how many parole hearings could be expected, and we made the allocation accordingly. As time went on, we adjusted that. We fine-tuned it a little bit so that we started not only using the Department of Correction statistics, but then we also started using actual petitions, something like we're talking about previously. So we looked for the allocation options for 2015 and 2016, and you see option one, which is basically going in the same direction that we have been going through the Judicial Council. And then we went to option two, which is looking a little bit more in detail at the available parole data workload, the release workload, petitions that were actually filed to be able to make a more stable and accurate distribution or allocation based on the workload model, or actual workload, not a model. So we were looking at option two, which we have $9.223 million to split it up, half as presented there, and the second to come back and allow the realignment committee to reassess the methodology used that we are presently using. And part of it is that when we got the AB 109 funding, what was actually happening was we were looking at these cases with respect to the workload that we were given by the Department of Corrections. We have seen in Orange County, San Diego County, L.A. County, that those statistics were absolutely false, and they're false across the board. And so we tried to capture the actuals with respect to that. And the amount of filings and the petitions are way more than I think anybody thought they would be, at least from the Department of Finance. So I think it's critical that we look at option two, which works a lot on workload. But there's a kind of a... One of the things that we want to talk about for the second part of the distribution that I'd like at least to have you guys check in on, and that is on AB 109, it talks about the release and the parole people. But what has now come in, Mr. Yamasaki and I have been contacted by some CEOs about an additional workload that everybody's becoming more concerned about, and that is the split sentences or the mandatory supervision cases. And those are cases which would have been sent to state prison and would have been put as far as a parole hearing goes. But those were not the sort of cases that were captured for us, that are being captured for us in any of the workload models that we have. It's not on WAFM. They are additional petitions that are being caused by the mandatory supervision areas. So we would, our desire is to take a look at, well, recommend option two, which allocates the funding as per the statistics that we have, and then take a look at the second allocation amount and use perhaps a different methodology or a different formula which incorporates some of these additional petitions for mandatory supervision that are not being captured in the present allocation numbers. David, anything to add?
He's speaking with his consultant first.
I see.
I thought
I was his consultant.
I'm sorry. The question?
Do you have
anything to add?
Oh, no. Thank you.
Any questions for Judge Boris or David or staff on this issue? Jake.
Sorry. So I guess I had the opposite, coming from the last item, is that we're now... I understand, Judge, your point about now we're starting to see more mandatory supervision cases. But here's one where this is ongoing workload. It exists that we're dealing with these cases, and yet we're splitting it into half years. And we're making an allocation in now. We're making another allocation in January when this is ongoing workload at this point. And I think this makes it more difficult to plan. I mean, for my court, obviously, the amount of money is not a huge amount one way or the other. But It just seems like that makes it more difficult, and at some point we should get on an annual cycle with these. I mean, our filings, for example, go through a lot of vetting. It takes many months afterwards. Everybody goes through and makes sure that their filings are correct. And here we're going into these six-month cycles. So that understanding the mandatory supervision piece may be why you want to split it into two halves. But otherwise, that just seems like we're making a lot more work for ourselves instead of just allocating it once per year.
David.
That's a good point, Jake. And I think initially when we were looking at this particular block of funding, there was a sense that we had all the information that we needed to perhaps make it an annual distribution. But in speaking with our colleagues, we're finding that there's a new variable that's coming up, and that is the filing of new petitions for folks that we never saw before. Most of these people were sent to custody, and then all of a sudden we're starting to see this pool of cases that were coming, that we're seeing for folks that would otherwise have gone to parole hearings or what have you. So this is kind of a new area for all of us, and we wanted to make sure that the variables that we're considering were as informative and appropriate as possible. And I get the idea that it's better to know what you're going to get for the whole year at the beginning of the year, but the nice thing is that you'll have a general idea. If your first half is X, likelihood is that your second half will be X as well, except some of these slight nuances that courts may see because of these huge, increases in petitions that are being filed for violations and whatnot. So at least we have a good idea of generally what we will probably see in the second half. But for any significant changes that some of the courts may see as it relates to these new petitions. And again, we don't want to disadvantage anybody, but we also want to make sure that we capture workload that we may not have seen thus far. So it's just trying to be very cautious and inclusive.
Yeah, this is Judge Boris again. Jake, I absolutely hear what you're saying. As when I was PJ, I want to know how much money I have to spend, and especially with the 1% cap, to make sure that I appropriately spent that money on the needs of the court. But that's why Zlotko's there. If Zlotko should visit every one of our courts and at the end of January and tell us, I'm kidding, Zlotko. And the staff is, we need to help each other to make sure that we stay on top of it, at least. And I think once we get the process rolling, once we make adjustments, if we think it's necessary, then I think we should go ahead and start doing the yearly allocation. I agree with you, Jake. It is a little knee-knocking to worry about how much money is going to show up on your doorstep.
Well, I think the other piece of it is that the resource allocation study, those minutes are going to be updated starting this fall, and this workload will all be incorporated into that study itself. So assuming that that's 2 years away from being adopted, is it worth going through and looking at another methodology to update for a single year, or is that extra staff work and time of the committee to look at for a one-year allocation? That's all going to be embedded, and this funding presumably would just go into that amount of funding that's allocated through that model. I'm not saying it will, but if the workload's in there after the new time study is done, is it worth going through that effort to capture managers' revision cases? Maybe it is. I don't know.
Sherry Card.
I was just going to say I support Jake's position for a variety of reasons. I'm not convinced that split sentences or mandatory supervision should be included, and would need to understand that a little bit more because, it's kind of a sentencing alternative. But I also agree with Jake that this is ongoing work and it should be ongoing money. And I hadn't even thought about the RAS, and it seems to me that I don't see a reason to split it in half. And if we do want to do a study, it seems like we should be doing it this year for perhaps rolling it into RAS or for the following fiscal year. And the other reason is somewhat inconsistent. When we're making adjustments to how we're doing the allocation, we usually give courts a little bit more notice than this would do by splitting it in half. And so I understood the first couple of years doing it because it was so new to us and the corrections numbers were so bad. But it just seems like if there's going to be any swings, we've always tried to give notice if there's going to be a swing. And there's not a lot of time to adjust this year, especially for smaller courts than LA, of course. There's not going to be a lot of time to adjust if the formula does a swing in the money. So I would be more in favor of, if we're going to be doing the review, do it during the fiscal year, come back in March and apply it for the following fiscal year so that those courts that would have a swing, if we do include mandatory supervision, would have time to adjust.
David.
I just want to respond very briefly to that. One of the reasons why the co-chairs wanted to have a little more time to look at this is that there's been a pretty noticeable increase in the number of petitions for those who have violated. And again, we want to make sure that courts have the opportunity to recoup some of the resources that are needed to process those cases. And I wasn't aware that this was something that was being examined by the WAFM committee, but on the other hand, we bring this issue up because there's a bit of concern that there's a substantial increase in workload that courts are going to be facing. So my thinking is that it's something that should continue to be looked at for at least another year before.
Right, and this Judge Boris. This is an ongoing amount of money, is that correct, or is there an end to it?
Yes,
for the AB 109 allocation?
It's ongoing, Judge.
So what would have to happen is that if we can incorporate this into WAFM, then we would have to ask that this 9.223 not be given to us separately anymore, that it be placed inside the WAFM distribution?
We would add it to the available WAFM resources. That would be Not a separate allocation.
Mary Beth?
My thoughts are is that WAFM is not being, we're way, 60%, 65%, 70% funded at WAFM, and this appears to be something that's ongoing and appears to be continuing to go on. I'm just concerned that if we incorporate this into a WAFM, and I want it to be, obviously, but if we incorporate it, if we don't do this while we're waiting for the incorporation, I just think this is going to end up not being funded appropriately as it is kinda with a separate allocation for AB 109. Anyway.
So what I was going to just add was, you know, I think I agree with Sherry and Jake in that, you know, the half-year allocation, I don't think is really serving anyone. Come January, we're not going to have the luxury of time to really analyze the data we may have collected in the first year, I think, to make any real substantive difference. I think my proposal would be that we go ahead and allocate the full amount, but that we use this next year to look at the data to start to come up with, you know, if we think it needs to be a new methodology, whether it needs to be absorbed into RAS. I think this time next year we'll have some information from the time studies from RAS to see what they're showing us. What we want to be careful of is not getting into too detailed data sets that go, you know, into far more detail than we currently use for RAS. Otherwise, we start to reward maybe inefficiency and things of that nature. I think this really needs to be looked at. So I would support for now we allocate the full amount for this fiscal year, but that doesn't preclude us from continuing to look at what the methodology needs to be next year. But then this way we go into our year, we know what we have, we know what we can spend, and we know it's being looked at again for next year, and we can take the time to really analyze that data and determine the appropriate methodology going forward.
So is that a motion, and is it a motion to allocate the full amount based on the workload methodology previously approved by the council?
So moved.
Second.
Carolyn, Judge Kilby.
So if we're seeing more filings and more activity than we anticipated with respect to realignment, and given that realignment was a shift of activity from the state level to the courts, are we considering a budget change proposal to account for the extra activity that we're seeing over and above what was anticipated? And if that is the case, and I would suggest it should be the case, then we should not be talking about rolling it into WAFM.
Well, as I understand it, based on what Jake had to say, it's we're not at the point of rolling it into WAFM. It's the resource assessment study that is now going to establish a case weight for this workload and roll it in to their.
So,
right?
Well, so this is Jake.
Okay.
So they're not here, but when they go to do the new time study, they're going to do a new time study on criminal. And criminal now exists in a post-AB 109 world, so as they're looking at how much time does it take to process a felony case or a misdemeanor case, it's going to be done under both Prop, you know, what is AB 109 and post-Prop 47. So if that work related to a, you know, PRCS petition or related to a mandatory supervision, you know, violation petition, just like VOPs are now today, those are not going to be included in the time study to determine, well, this is how much time it takes to handle an average felony case or an average misdemeanor case. So that's all I'm saying is that work that we're doing is going to be incorporated into that study. So that'll be in the RAS side. Well, then when it goes into the, you know, WAFM side, then we have to determine, well, what funding is there now available in order to apply to that? Well, if the work is embedded, then you kind of need to take the funding that's related to that and put it in, you know, to apply against it. That's an assumption. Now we'll have to work through that in the model and make sure that's what we want to do. But all I was saying is when they go do the time study, they're going to include all of this work as misdemeanor and felony work, and it'll change the amount of minutes per case. So it's going to end up being embedded in the RAS study.
I have Jose Guillen and then Judge Harmon.
I second Mary Beth's motion.
All right. I think we already had a second from Judge Slough, but I'll note it's also seconded by Mr. Guillen. Judge Harmon.
I just want to understand when you talk about that this could be absorbed into the WAFM or the RAS study, and I'm not quite sure how that's done. As to the parole hearings, are you considering those as a separate caseload? Because, for instance, we have a prison. We have parole hearings from Los Angeles County cases. So if they're getting credit for the case initially, we're the ones doing the parole hearings on it. So is that separated out in those studies?
I don't know how they're separating because they haven't started yet, so I don't know if they're separating out parole, which might be. They might separate those out as a separate filing that goes in with a different weight on its own. So, I mean, that's something that we can pass on to them. I mean, those of us that are on the committee could pass it on.
I don't think Sherry has a problem with that. That was a joke.
I think it's critical, and that's the distinction here. Exactly. This is taking in parole on a separate funding source, and I mean we have a judge that we hire to do these cases because of LA is sending everybody to our prison.
David.
Yeah, I wanted to say that based on the motion, I'm going to vote no on this particular motion. The measurement for the workload is the petition being filed. We're counting petitions for different categories, and it's not a far off from the original intent of measuring workload to each jurisdiction. And Judge Harmon brings up a very good point. Who gets credit? It's something that's going to take a bit of time to do the analysis. And petitions, very measurable. You can count them for each jurisdiction. And certainly courts that are receiving the petition will be tasked with processing the petition and subsequent workload. So I think I'm going to vote no because I do think that the more accurate way of associating the workload is by capturing the petitions filed in each court.
Any other comments?
Maybe I'm missing something, which is very likely, but to me, what you just stated makes it more supportive of just waiting and let RAS do their study, making certain that they understand the components of their study and not break it up into these two allocation method. I mean, what you just said seems to me to support the concept of the motion.
Conceptually, this is David again, yes, but I don't know that the actual timeline study is going to be processed in short order. This is something that's going to take a bit of time to accomplish, and that's one of the reasons. 1 year, split up in two, let's see if the second half yields something different. And at the conclusion of 6 months, I think we'll have a pretty good idea if it's negligible or if it's substantial. And that's kind of the reason why it was being brought forth for consideration is we're seeing something that we didn't previously experience.
This is Judge Boris. I agree with David Yamasaki.
Any other thoughts? All right, we have a motion to allocate the full year amount based on the workload methodology previously approved by the council, and we do have a second or 2 seconds to that. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
All right, I'm gonna have to do a roll call vote. So, 1 second. Judge Boris?
No.
Alan Carlson?
Yes.
Sherry Carter?
Yes.
Jake Chatters?
Yes.
Judge Cope?
Yes.
Judge Conklin?
Yes.
Judge DeSantos?
No.
Rick Feldstein?
Yes.
Kimberly Flenner? Judge Good?
Yes.
Jose Guillen?
Yes.
Judge Harmon?
No.
Judge Holland?
Yes.
Judge Johnson?
No.
Judge Kuhl?
Yes.
Sean Landry?
Yes.
Judge Lee?
Yes.
Stephen Nash?
Yes.
Debbie Norrie?
Yes.
Mike Roddy?
No.
Judge Slough?
Yes.
Judge Smith?
Yes.
Mary Beth Todd?
Yes.
Kim Turner?
Yes.
Christina Volkers?
Yes.
David Yamasaki?
No.
I would also vote yes, so the ayes have it. And the motion carries. I would note, just to update our attendance, Christina Volkers is here, and she was also here to vote on the previous item as well. Thank you.
Can I just make one more point?
Sure.
Not related to the motion, but I just wanted to thank the JC team, Shelley Curran, Patrick Ballard, and Francine Byrne. They really jumped on this issue very quickly and very thoroughly, and I think we're a huge benefit in getting the governor's attention to this, and also the amount of money that we ended up seeing was largely because of the effort that they had presented in terms of the workload that we would be seeing. So I want to just say thank you to them. A huge job.
Yes, thank you as well from all of us. The next item on our agenda is item number 4, security funding. Sean Landry will present this, and the materials begin on page 65 of your packet.
Okay. Thank you, Judge Earl, members of the committee. Last year, a working group was established in response to criminal justice realignment, where money was transferred from court budgets to the sheriff for security services. However, there's a group of approximately 39 trial courts that did not have that provided non-sheriff security services, but there was no money or no growth mechanism to fund those courts, so they were, in a sense, frozen in time. In the spring, this body approved, and the Judicial Council approved, a spring BCP to present to DOF for increased costs associated with non-sheriff supplied security services. And Department of Finance basically said no to that BCP, and subsequently it was not in the governor's budget. And the reason that they gave was that trial court should prioritize security expenses against other costs and utilize their general fund augmentation. As a result of that response, the working group met on June 15th to discuss several options, and we have three options before you today. The first option is to essentially try again and submit a BCP for fiscal year 16-17 to address increased costs for court-provided security, and that's for the maintenance costs. So that's resubmitting a BCP. The second option is, beginning in fiscal year 16-17, any new general fund augmentation received would be provided to trial courts with those security services. This funding would be based on the same growth factor received by the county sheriffs. However, if the sheriff's growth factor is greater than the general fund augmentation, the monies given to trial courts would not exceed the general fund allocation. So, for example, if the sheriff received a 10% allocation with their growth factor, and the general fund received 3%, then those trial courts would only receive the 3% rather than a larger allocation. And the last option is option 3, and that is, beginning in fiscal year 16-17, any new general fund augmentation received would also be provided to trial courts based on the general fund percent increase. So in other words, whatever is received in the general fund would also be passed on then to those courts that provide non-sheriff security. The recommendation of the committee is option 1, which is to submit another BCP and try again, and then also option 2. And with that, that is our recommendation, and conclude my report.
And the Sean, I just wanted to clarify the total amount of the augmentation that we sought for 15-16 was about $3.7 million?
Right, $3.7 million.
All right.
The average growth factor that the sheriff has received over the past 3 years has been about 2%. Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, Patrick.
Yeah, 2.2%.
2.2.
And based on that, we would have ended up getting about a little over $4 million if with that same growth. So asking for $3.7 million was actually less than what we would have received with the growth rate that the sheriff provided security received.
Any thoughts? Is there a motion?
I'll move the recommendation.
I'll second it.
That was Mary Beth, correct? And Mr. David Yamasaki. And that is option 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We are going to turn to item 5, allocation of new funding for benefit cost changes. And Patrick Ballard, the supervising budget analyst from the Judicial Council Finance Office, is going to present. The materials for this item begin on page 68 of your packet.
So go back in time to just last September, we submitted a budget change request for the benefit cost changes for 14-15 costs. Those are for the full year impact in 15-16. We have to submit something, a budget request in September, in order to have it included in the governor's proposed budget in January. The problem with that is that there's a lot of courts do not have their confirmed rates at that point for health, for their health costs, retiree health, and also health benefits. So it's more of an estimate in terms of those costs. The amount of 42.7 submitted in for the governor's budget also included a $10.8 million restoration of the $22 million reduction for that was in the 2014 Budget Act for that DOF had estimated for the employer paid portion of the employee share. We continued collecting updated costs up until mid-February, which we can again, DOF gives us one more opportunity to update those costs. And we submitted a proposal for $38.8 million, which included a reduction from the estimate of the employee health and also retiree health of about $6.5 million, but also included an increase in what courts had negotiated as the employee share, the employee portion of retirement paid for the employee share. So that amount of $13.4 million was considered by the committee, an allocation methodology was considered by the committee last May, couple months ago, and that was presented to the Judicial Council at their June 26th meeting, which they approved. So what's currently now remaining is the $25.4 million, of which $24.2 million is actually for Court Operations Program 4510, which is non-interpreter, and then $1.2 million is for the court program, program 4510, 4545. So that amount is $1.2 million. So what the proposal before you today is for the approval of the proposed allocation of the total confirmed cost changes reflected in column F of attachment 1. Those are total confirmed cost changes for the 14-15 benefit costs.
Any thoughts? Is there a motion?
I'll
second. Second.
Chris Volkers moved, Jake Chatters and Sean Lander second.
Second.
And that is, the recommendation is on page 69 of your materials. Any further discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries.
We're running out of schedule, so we're going to move on to the next item without any delay. So we're going to have Colin Simpson and Stephen Nash present the Trockler Trust Fund allocation. I'm sorry. Yes. Sorry, Stephen. Stephen Chang. I was looking at Stephen Nash and said Stephen Chang. So the other way. On page 71 is when these materials start in your binders. We're on item 6, pages 71 through 115 in your materials. I'm going to give a brief overview of the items, and then Colin's going to go into detail on each of the various allocations. So staff has computed four specific allocations that the council will consider at their July 28th meeting, business meeting, for fiscal year 2015-16, the fiscal year that we're currently in. There are four allocations that staff has computed, mainly based on council policy. Allocation A, if you can go to slide number 4 for me, let me skip ahead. We're going to, staff has computed what the council has approved in terms of when we say base, we mean ongoing allocations that the council's approved. And there's basically two types. We're going to have the council approve what they already approved last year as ongoing, as well as any subordinate judicial officer conversions that convert to a judgeship. I'll explain those in a little bit of detail. So the ongoing, just to let you also know, the Prop 47, this is kind of related to the conversation we had earlier, is not necessarily going to be an ongoing or base, so that's not considered base, although that's going to be an allocation that the council will consider. The criminal justice realignment, although that's been ongoing funding, because this body has wanted to see reallocate based on different workload measures that have not fallen into a court's base allocation. So that's not part of a court's base. The benefits funding that you just are recommending to the council will become part of a court's base allocation starting this year. So that will become part of this, what we're calling a base allocation. And then item 7, the court-appointed dependency council allocation, it's not a base allocation because it's based on reimbursement of your actual cost. Or if you're on the draft program, it supports the vendors. So just to give you some context in terms of the current items that we're talking about today, whether or not they are included or not in the base allocation. One other thing that the Colin will cover from last year, what we're carrying over, just to remind you that there was a $22.7 million reduction related to a revenue shortfall in the trial court trust fund. That was allocated by the council on a one-time basis. And so that's not included, and Colin will show you how it relates to the other allocations that you'll be considering today, but that's not part of your base. That's actually been restored. That's now for 15-16. That's actually part of your beginning base allocation, the $22.7 million. In terms of the, just one other couple of technical things, there are some general fund monies that are allocated that are part of court's base allocation, specifically related to benefits. The Department of Finance, starting last year, started including that as part of court's trial court trust fund base allocation, or it's allocating appropriate other trial court trust fund. We're hoping to move all of that into the trial court trust fund. So all your base allocation will be essentially from the trial court trust fund, no longer from the general fund. We think we should be able to accomplish that in following. This is like it'd be funded from the general fund, but from a budgetary standpoint, it would all be coming out of the one fund. It's a technical issue, because they decided to break it up in the budget. But we're saying everything clear in the budget, all in one place, so that everything matches. So you don't have to look at page 15 of the Budget Act to find money over here and page 17 over there, and it's all clean all together.
Right. It will be a transfer to the trial court trust fund from the general fund as opposed to a separate item in the Budget Act. The other item, for those I know, some of you are very technical, you'll know that there's also a distribution from the ICNA, the Immediate and Critical Needs Account. We consider that part of your base, but it is distributed from that particular account. Last year was $10 million because they gave $40 million in relief to that fund. This year it goes back to $50 million. So this year, 15, 16, and presumably forever, $50 million will be distributed out of the ICNA account rather than the Trial Court Trust Fund. So that $50 million is considered part of the base allocation that we've computed for you today and that we'll be presenting to the council. Allocation B, if you can go to the next slide. This is the WAFM adjustment for 15-16. We've updated WAFM to include all the relevant filings, and Colin will go over all the details. Also, the recommended, that was actually approved by the council, the comp civil complex case weight has been reflected in the RAS, the resource assessment study workload, so that's reflected in this RAS WAFM computation. And we're allocating $67.9 million. That was a recommendation from the advisory committee, and that was approved by the council last week, June 28th, to allocate the net. The $90.6 million that was actually provided in the Budget Act of 2015, less $22.7 million, which is $67.9 million. And again, Colin will walk over. We'll go through some of the details. Allocation C is based on whatever the WAFM adjustments resulted in. There are some... For those of you who don't know, the courts that have a meet the funding floor requirement, they get additional funding because, but it's not because we don't get any funding for that. It's funded from all the other courts' allocations. So in this year, 15-16, there are 8 courts that receive a funding floor adjustment. The other 50 courts contribute towards that amount. It's about a little less than $600,000 this year. And finally, allocation D. This is a 2% set-aside amount where we computed it using the methodology that was recommended by this body a few years ago and the council's approved for the last 3 years. And interestingly, the number goes down because although we did get new funding this year, usually that number is going to go up every single year if we get new funding. So this year we got $90.6 million new funding. But what they did was that they took away $103.7 million for the court-appointed counsel that was normally scheduled out of trial court trust fund, the program 4510 appropriation, and moved it to a separate item. So it actually reduced the overall program 4510 appropriation. That's why this year it actually went down from 37.9, 14-15, it actually goes down to $37.7 million in total this year. So the 2%, the statewide number actually goes down. Even though we got 90.6, because they removed 103, the total appropriation went down from last year. And so I'll let Colin take over from now. He'll go over each of these items. And he'll also give an overview of the current state of the trial court trust fund, the funding condition statement, and address other things.
Bear with me a moment here. I'm going to back up. So before we get into the four allocations, and then there are also two additional items related to the trial court trust fund that don't require any action. I just want to talk in general about the trial court trust fund and the fiscal status of the trial court trust fund. Last time we spoke to the trial court budget advisory committee in March about fiscal status of the trial court trust fund, it was basically the same as it is now. The fund condition statement itself looks slightly different, and I'll explain that in a second. But the general assumptions haven't really changed that much. They basically, what we assumed or estimated, have basically held roughly true. The only things that really have changed is we have provided, because of our concerns about the State Controller's Office ability to make distributions to the courts in July, we did do some cash advances to the courts. In the June distribution, which impacted the fiscal year 14-15 fund balance, but those monies will be recovered. In essence, it's a paper transaction. It applies 15-16, but it just means the expenditures in 15-16 will be less because we'll be recovering those advances.
Are there any questions about that?
Sherry. So one question is really, on the executive branch side, do they have the same cash flow problems where they have to borrow money to make payroll.
Oh, yeah, but they do that at the global level where the state control and the treasurer and the Department
they're
of Finance
the ones who do
track it.
It.
Yeah,
yeah,
so they do it for all the those funds that are managed in the state treasury.
Okay, it just seems like another example of why the 1% cap just doesn't work, you know, so I was curious.
Well, this issue actually wasn't necessarily related, and it is tied to that 1% cap, but this is also an issue of cash flow issues at the Trial Court Trust Fund side as well. So it relates to when the revenues flow in for the Trial Court Trust Fund versus when the monies are supposed to be distributed to the courts. So it is related to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't have a problem. We had
right.
Not much.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So I just wanted to quickly make a note. So you can see the fund condition statement. I didn't refer to this before, but the fund condition statement is actually displayed. It's attachment 6C.
Page 79 of the material.
Page 79.
Page
that's
79.
Correct. And in there you'll see estimates related to 1415 and 1516. And for 1516, you'll see that there are actually three columns provided. The first one is labeled expenditure authority, the second one is savings, and the third one is the estimate, the estimated, oh, I'm sorry. I'm not looking at it in front of me, so I don't know the exact label, but it's the final estimate. So the expenditure authority basically just refers to the Budget Act appropriation for those programs, when we're talking about expenditures, for those programs for 2015, with some small adjustments related to plan transfers between those programs. The savings basically reflect the difference between that expenditure authority and the planned or already approved allocations from the Judicial Council. So you'll notice there's savings related to programs 3005, 3015, 4510, 4525, and 4555. The 3005 and the 3015 both relate to allocations that have been approved by the council. So that's just showing the difference between the allocations the council approved versus what's in the expenditure authority. 4510 reflects estimated allocations and mainly the difference between the expenditure authority and the allocations relate to those advances I just spoke to you about. Basically $20.9 million. So, and we are reducing courts' distributions in 1516 by about $20.9 million because those monies were already advanced to them in terms of the state in 1415. And I should just note.
Any questions? I mean, this again is our help in trouble
right.
to manage cash. So, what we had to do is to get you money early for July. So that you weren't in a cash flow problem between when the budget was passed and when the controller would be making their allocations. And so since that money was already allocated and we have to manage it against the prior fiscal year, we're not then giving it to you because you already have it. That's the gist. We're working actively. Again, it's partly due to the 1%. It's also the fact that we got underfunded in the Trial Court Trust Fund for things like benefits and kind of taking the Trial Court Trust Fund down where we have very little fund balance, even as we get to the fiscal year end, to help manage you, manage your cash issues.
Actually, on that note, we did just speak with the State Controller's Office this morning regarding the July distributions and concerns about those. And the news is basically good. They still aren't offering us a guarantee, but they have their main concern was about the appropriations being loaded into their system. Those have been loaded into the system, so that was a major obstacle they're concerned about. It's been addressed. So they believe that they'll be able to make the distributions as planned on July 10th and July 15th.
You're the first to hear of that. We'll email the rest of the courts after this meeting.
So just to continue on, so the 4510 savings it's basically related to the cash advances. Program 4525, judges' compensation. That is our estimate of savings based on a vacancy rate that's slightly lower than the average since fiscal year 08-09. So it's a reasonable and conservative estimate. And then the program 4555 savings is merely a difference between the actual appropriation authority for the Equal Access Fund program and the actual revenue, or I shouldn't say actual revenue, and the estimated revenue that we see that program receiving. And since it could only expend what it receives, that difference is basically the fact that it has its revenue has decreased significantly over the years. And one last note as it relates to the fund condition statement, as it relates to the revenues. So in comparison to 14-15, the revenues are roughly $25 million less than what we estimated for 14-15. So we're projecting a continued decline. That is being backfilled by that an additional $35.2 million in general fund backfill. The reason why it's not 35.2 is because part of the shortfall in 14-15 actually was not funded by the Department of Finance. So that's why it's not 35, it's only about 24. And then there's some additional growth in revenues that don't support base allocations like civil assessment that don't count against that. So that's basically the status of what we're projecting. Now that this fund condition statement includes all the allocations that we're recommending today, as well as what's been approved previously. So this includes the items 2, 3, 5, and 7, amounts related to that. And based on that, you'll see for fiscal year 15-16 that we have an estimate of ending funded balance of $17.7 million. Of that, $3.4 million of that is unrestricted. And you can see that in attachment 6C, rows 34 and 42 show the total ending fund balance and the unrestricted ending fund balance. And just to make one more note. Oh, I'm sorry.
When you put forth an increase in civil assessments next year, did you give any consideration to the perhaps negative effects of the amnesty program on civil assessment collections?
We hadn't taken that into account. But that is a net zero impact on the Trail Corp Trust Fund fund balance, because basically every dollar that is received is distributed back to the courts. So as it relates to the fund balance for the TCTF, it has no impact. As it relates to distributions to trial courts, that does have an impact. So it didn't include yet an estimate for that, because we're still kind of figuring that out. It was based on the trends we'd seen outside of that amnesty program. But that is true. That is something that will have some of an impact. I've done some analysis. I'm not going to say what that result of that is yet, but no, it's not included in that. So also just to wrap up the fund condition statement. So this also includes the discontinuation of the $20 million transfer from the IMF to the TCTF. And so it's difficult to tell from this fund condition statement, basically because of that cash advance we've talked about a couple times here already. But there is a $9.3 million revenue shortfall in the TCTF estimated for 15-16. And you can see that in attachment 6C, column E, row 44, if you subtract $20.9 million from that amount. So that's a summary of the TCTF. So now that you have an idea of what's going on in the Trail Corp Trust Fund, we're going to move to the allocations. And I'm just going to also let you know that attachments 6D and 6E, if you want to see a summary of the allocations by programs 30 and 4510, you'll see them there. So that includes not only the approved allocations already, but the ones that are being recommended today, as well as other items that aren't required to be brought before the Judicial Council, which we explain in the report. So allocation A is the base allocation, and you will see attachment 6F provides an itemization of this base allocation. And what we provided this year, just to highlight the revenue shortfall reduction, or actually make a note that it's not there, is that we actually provide all the ongoing allocations that occurred in 14-15 that got to the ending base allocation in 14-15. So you can see the starting base allocation amount in 14-15 in column 1. You can see the individual ongoing allocations, which are basically the WAFM allocation, the WAFM funding floor allocation adjustment, the benefits allocation, SGO conversions, allocation reduction for SGO conversions, and I'm forgetting one. Am I? No, I guess I'm not. So that shows that the $22.7 million revenue shortfall reduction, that's not included in your beginning base for 15-16. It's going to be addressed when we talk about the WAFM allocation in a second. So just to assure courts, nothing's being double counted here. Your base is already addressing that $22.7 million, removing it and basically addressing it in another fashion in 15-16. You can see the actual amounts, the amounts related to this allocation A in attachment 6B, which is a summary. So I'll be referring to the summary throughout this discussion because that will provide you the court by court amounts for each recommendation. So you don't have to go through all the details. You can just look at one worksheet, look at the summary, and you can see here are the amounts for the base allocation, here are the amounts for the WAFM allocation, here are the amounts for the funding floor allocation, and here are the amounts for the 2% set aside, as well as a summary of what the recommended allocations for the other items are. But of course, those amounts have changed already based on your actions today. So one last thing before, do we want to go through all of the allocations first, or do you want to address them piecemeal? What is your preference?
Any suggestions? I think you can go through them all, and if anyone has a question as we transition to the next one, just let me know.
Okay. So just to wrap up allocation A. So starting with the beginning, 14-15, it then includes the general fund benefits allocation that we've talked about, as well as an annualization related to those SGO conversions, and that gets you to that final amount. So moving on to, the reason why we're doing this is because it's required by statute. So this is something that the Judicial Council is required to make a preliminary allocation in July, and because of that, we are providing this for you for your recommendation to the Judicial Council. So moving on to allocation B, WAFM adjustments. So as Steven mentioned, this WAFM adjustments include, it's a net allocation of 67.9. Did you have a question, Steve?
Yeah, what page are we on?
Oh, I'm sorry.
77.
I'm so focused on attachments, I don't even know page numbers.
Page 77.
Page 77. And page 72 is the narrative related to allocation B. So if you're looking at the narrative, it's page 72. And if you're looking at the attachments, it's 77. So the WAFM adjustments reflect basically a net amount of $67.9 million. And this is the $90.6 million in new funding, less $22.7 million related to the revenue shortfall. This was a Judicial Council action on June 26th. This was their chosen methodology that going forward, that $22.7 million revenue shortfall would be offset against the new funding. So that's why it's $67.9 million. So if you look at, if you want to see the actual individual adjustments related to the WAFM adjustments, you would look at attachment 6H. Oh, what page is that?
92.
We need to budget some magnifying glasses so folks can look at this from a distance.
So the WAFM allocation is broken up into several parts based on Judicial Council policy. So the first part of WAFM is the reallocation of the historical funding, and it's on a five-year track. This is the third year, 30% of that historical funding of about $1.4 billion. Is being reallocated this year based on the current WAFM. That's roughly $432.1 million. Now, you won't see a amount of $432.1 million because we're just reflecting the net change from how that $432 million was historically allocated, which is displayed in column E, and the reallocation using the WAFM proportion, which is column F. The net amount, column G, is the amount that's being reallocated. In addition, we're also reallocating, based on council policy, an amount equal to the new funding provided to the court since fiscal year 13-14. Undesignated new funding. So in addition to the $146.3 million that was provided in 13-14 and 14-15, an additional $67.9 million is being reallocated for a total of $214.2 million. And you can see that in two separate columns. So the amounts related to the 146.3 is reflected in column J. That's the net amount. And then the reallocation of the $67.9 million is reflected in column M. We also have the reallocation of the new funding. So there's $146.3 million in new funding. And this is the reallocation of it. So you will see the net difference between the amount that was allocated previously and what's being allocated now. So it's a net zero transaction. But there's the $146.3 million, and there's also the allocation of the $67.9 million. So the reallocation of the $146.3 million is reflected in column N, as well as column Q. So the net result of those two is $0. And then the $67.9 million is reflected in column O. And then one last adjustment would be the reversal of the 15% reallocation applied last year. So the sum of all those adjustments is, again, also reflected in that summary. So if you look at attachment 6B, the summary, column 4, the amounts are displayed there by court. Now, I'm not going to go into the details of the calculations related to the WAFM, and we discussed that with TICBAC previously. But you can see a summary of the changes from 14-15 based on the final 15-16 in attachment 6I, which I don't know the page number of course. I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, did you say
6I? 6I. I think it's a 96. Yeah, 96. As well as a detailed comparison by component, so the WAFM funding change, as well as by component and cluster, in attachment 6J. So if you're looking for the actual changes related to benefits, to the RAS FTE need, to comparisons related to the, the WAFM funding need itself, as well as I think it looks at the funding floor adjustments, all those are displayed in attachment 6J. Are there any questions? Okay. Moving on to allocation C. So allocation C is the funding floor adjustment. This is per judicial council policy, February 20th, 2014. They approved the allocation of a funding floor, a minimum funding floor as well as a graduated funding floor. Based on that council policy, before you see an allocation of $560,269 to eight courts, as well as a negative allocation of $562,269 to the other 50 courts for a net allocation of zero. And this is attachment 6B, column 5. You can actually see the details of this calculation in the WAFM workbook. I believe it's 6K, 6K1, and 6K2. So starting on page 108. So 6K3 actually, just to make a note of this, is the estimated 2015-16 WAFM allocation. Now, this isn't your court's base allocation because we're making adjustments for WAFM or excluding certain things such as subordinate judicial officer funding, security funding. But if you're interested in looking at what your amount is, it's displayed there. And this is used to calculate the funding floor. We first determine what the court's WAFM allocation is before determining if a funding floor adjustment should be made for those courts that qualify. Any questions? Okay, the last item that requires action is allocation D. And I should have actually been reading off these recommendations. Allocation D is recommend the Judicial Council allocate each court's one-time contribution toward the statutorily required 2% reserve in the TCTF, $37.7 million. As Steve mentioned, this is actually lower than last year, and that's because of not only the shifting of the court-appointed counsel over, but also the removal of the $40 million in one-time general fund monies. So even though we received $38.8 million in benefits monies and $90.6 million in new funding for court operations, the net result was still negative because of the reduction of that $40 million plus the negative $103.7. So the amounts related by court to this recommendation are reflected on Attachment 6B, the summary, column 6. The reasons for this is basically a statutorily required item. So we're basically providing this as required by statute. It's using the methodology that's been used since the inception of the 2% set aside, but it is not prescribed in law. This is something that the council has discretion on how to allocate these amounts. So we're coming before you to recommend how that reduction, that one-time reduction, be allocated to the courts. Any questions? No? Okay.
Sherry Carter.
It's not necessarily on the methodology that's previously been used, but just on what has been the view of the proposed changes to the 2% that the committee had put together on changing that.
What's the question?
So on the 2% holdback, we had proposed language changes to the statute, and what is the status of that? Where are we going with that?
I think it's supposed to be PCLC, SEAC, and the PJs are supposed to be reviewing it.
It's going to the, I believe it's going to the PJs and SEAC at their August meeting.
Okay.
Correct?
We haven't started planning that agenda.
Okay.
We did talk about it. Sounds good.
That was my understanding, and then they'll report back to us at a meeting, at our meeting after that. Then PCLC is supposed to take a look at it as well.
Has Judicial Council staff continued to have dialogues about why that 2% is no longer necessary because of A, WAFM, and B, the 1%? I mean, at the time that they created the statute for the 2%, it was because we had not developed a system that would allocate the money in a more equitable fashion. And now that we've done that with WAFM, this 2% is really an unnecessary statute. Are we continuing to have that dialogue so that we can eliminate it completely?
We are having the dialogue consistent with the what was approved by the committee that came up with the revisions to the 2%. So that was not what we were charged to do, to talk about eliminating. We're talking about the changes that the committee came up with, which is reducing the fraction.
Right. Yeah, I recall it was setting it at a fixed amount as opposed to a percentage based upon what the 2% was this fiscal year or last fiscal year?
Prior, when it was funded out of the improvement fund, it was right. It was a fraction. It was about $9 million. Mm-hmm. It had been historical.
Well, I mean,
it would roll over every year.
I understand that, but we are the only branch of government that has to take money out of our operating budget, our operating that's at, 76% of WAFM or 50% of WAFM or whatever it is, taking money out of that already underfunded operation account and putting it into a safer rainy day account. So I understand that we've got some language changes, but the ultimate goal I always thought was to eliminate it completely.
Any other thoughts on that?
So I just have a different question. What is the timing of the proposal that's out there? This will not affect us this fiscal year, or is it going to...
The 2%?
Yes.
Any changes to the 2% would be no sooner than next fiscal year, starting as a budget trailer bill.
Any other thoughts on that?
The last two items, there are two more allocations, ENF, don't require action. They are being provided to the Trucker Budget Advisory Committee to review and possibly consider. So the allocation E is merely what we're presenting are the program and project allocations related to programs 3005 and 3015, and this is where I want to note, if you're looking at the slideshow presentation, you're going to see these numbers in parentheses after these references to programs. What this is now that they've converted to this fiscal system.
The Department of Finance has converted to
right.
this fiscal system.
They have changed the appropriation items. So now there's no longer a program 30.05 that you'd find if you looked in the Budget Act. It's not there. What's there instead is a program that's actually combining programs, elements, and components. So if you would have, say, Equal Access Fund is program 4555090, right? They've combined all those into one sequence, one program. And so now program 30.05 is program 0140010. So just so you know, when you see these, I'm putting these next to the programs each and every time so that you become accustomed to them, so you know if you're ever trying to reconcile this to what's in the Budget Act, you'll be able to do that. So getting back to the allocation, the program and project allocations reflected in Attachment 6D are allocations that have already been approved by the Judicial Council. So no action is required. However, based on the 2015 Budget Act, now that's been enacted, it is possible that TICBAC, the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, may want to reconsider some of these allocations. So we're presenting this information to you for you to review and consider if you want to make any kind of motions. The program allocations related to program 4510 are displayed in attachment 6E, and what you'll see is in the far right column, if it's already been approved by the Judicial Council, it says JC approved. So if any of those items that you want to reconsider, actually any items you want to reconsider in general, but those that have already been approved, those are there for you to refer to and potentially consider. Any questions on that information? All right, the last item is Allocation F. Allocation F, basically what we're just letting you know that there are still some allocation items that are going to be outstanding after today's actions. There's three of them. Two of them relate to information needs to be done. So there's the allocation of the 2% set aside, not of the set aside itself, but the allocation for urgent needs and then the allocation of any remaining amount back to the courts. That obviously is pending because courts still need to apply for that. There's a timeline, and then, of course, the remainder would be allocated in March. Another item is the dependency council collections. Once final revenue amounts are known for 14-15, they'll come before the advisory committee and the council for allocation of those amounts. And then the last item is the 1% preliminary allocation reduction related to the 1% fund balance cap. Because courts have until July 15th to provide their preliminary fund balance information for 14-15, this allocation recommendation will not be brought before the advisory committee for their consideration prior to it being presented to the judicial council on July 20th, 2015. And then the reason for this is because statute requires the council to allocate a preliminary reduction in July. So unfortunately, we cannot wait. So we will provide the information to the TCVAC, but unfortunately, they will not have time to meet and consider and make a recommendation before the materials need to be provided to the council. So the TCVAC will review the final information, the final reduction information, after the courts have submitted their final fund balance information by October 15th.
Just one note. Last year, there was a committee that reviewed all of these calculations because it was a new process. And so the council, based on the recommendation from this body, approved a one-time review committee. And that's no longer necessary. That's been done away with. So now it's going to go directly. Any of these computations are going to go directly to the council.
This concludes this presentation. Are there any questions?
Colin, I just want to make sure that I understand the recommendations. So you essentially have four recommendations. The first you've labeled allocation A, and that is to, is it to approve the beginning base allocation for court operations of $1.683 billion?
Yes, I have it displayed right there on the monitor.
And allocation B, allocate each court share of a net allocation increase of $67.9 million, which is the $90.6 million provided for in the governor's budget, less the $22.7 million that the council voted to reduce from that at its June meeting?
That's correct.
And then the third recommendation, allocation C, is to allocate each court's share of the funding floor allocation adjustment, which totals $560,000 approximately dollars. And then allocation D, or recommendation D, allocate each court's share of the 2%.
That's correct.
All right. Any questions on any of those? Judge Good.
I'm just wondering if there were any items in what you've presented to us other than allocation D that called upon you to make policy judgments as opposed to doing arithmetic.
No, you understand it correctly. The first three are basically applying policy, and the fourth is the only one that requires some discretion.
Thank you.
Mary Beth?
I guess just one observation I made when you provided some of the relativity comparisons by cluster is we are seeing what we predicted, which are some fluctuations. It looks like bigger fluctuations for the smaller courts and actually mm-hmm. and for on both ends, actually on of the spectrum is where we're seeing the bigger fluctuations. And I know I've been contacted by some courts, but I'm wondering, are we doing any type of outreach to those courts that are going to experience a more substantial fluctuation to provide any type of technical assistance with them to look at, you know, whether or not it's something that is just they need to operationalize, whether it's kind of a outlier for this year because they got, well, I think what we're seeing is we saw a big decrease in filings, and now some courts are seeing them shoot back up. And trying to help them go through that analysis of whether this is something that might be appropriate for some sort of a bridge funding, maybe applying for 2% monies, or whether it's something that they need to just operationalize and this is what this is. I've heard from a few courts. I'm a little concerned that courts are kind of going, oh my gosh, I'm seeing this huge reduction without really looking behind the numbers, looking at what the numbers are telling them and whether we've got any plans to do any kind of outreach of that nature, because I am concerned some courts are going to see a substantial change and immediately react without really understanding the numbers and what they're telling them as far as how they need to modify their operations.
I obviously can only speak for finance, you know, as it relates to kind of outreach. And I think what you're discussing is much broader. I think it's kind of how do you address, you know, this operationally, how you address those issues. So, I mean, we haven't actually done any outreach yet to the courts to, say, address, you know, what may be funding issues and how they can address that based on reductions in filings. But I can't say, like, for filings in general. We saw it was a general decline again this year, and it was pretty much even throughout. The declines weren't spread in a really broad range. So I think the drastic changes. I think we saw much more drastic changes last year, but I think part of that was because of the fact that we were building in 2 years of filings information instead of 1 year.
So I know Sherry had her hand up. I'm just wondering really if the outreach that you speak of is really the role of judicial counsel staff, or if it's better suited for the PJ and CEO chairs with assistance from judicial counsel staff instead.
I guess I'm really raising it from the standpoint I think we need to be prepared. The calls are going to come in, and how are we going to respond to that, and how are we going to properly direct, whether it's with fiscal staff, whether it's with PJ CEOs, to help any court out there that is seeing a large fluctuation, to kind of do that analysis, determine, is this something that's just telling me it's time to downsize, or, you know, is the funding floor being used? You know, did we see any safety net? That was another question. Was did we see where the funding floor was coming in on any courts this time that hadn't before, needed to take advantage of that? But I think it's just something, when you see it, we predicted it, we know that this is what we would feel, and I'm just calling the question just kind of so that we can be prepared and be happy. We can work with it with the PJs and CEOs, but I think the first stop they go to is finance, to go, hey, what is this you just sent out? And I'm raising it just so that we are somewhat prepared to assist those. I don't know that it's a huge number. I just want to make sure we're somewhat prepared for that type of call, to help walk them through what you just walked us through, so that they can better understand their numbers and what their numbers are telling them.
It might be helpful, though, if you and Rick and then Judge Slough and the incoming chair to TCPJAC have a discussion with the finance team to talk about how to answer those
sure.
questions and if they get that phone call, where they can go or where they can refer folks to.
Sure.
Sherry Carter.
Well, that's the advantage of following you, Judge Earl, because that's exactly what I was going to say, is I don't see that as the role of this committee. And since you're working on the agenda for the SEAC meeting, I think that's where it belongs, because a CEO should not wait until the budget numbers come out and then say, oh, my gosh. They should be projecting their own filing numbers and their own budgeting, and I would not support them using the 2% emergency for lack of planning, because that's not an emergency. I think they need to learn how to look at their filings like we all do and manage that and make sure that they're you know, prepared. So I think that we need to do some training, but I think that it doesn't belong with this group.
Any other thoughts? Is there a motion to approve the recommendations either in whole or individually? Mike Ronnie.
I'll move staff recommendations for allocations A, B, C, and D as recommended.
All right. Judge Johnson.
I agree with the motion, but I was wondering if we could consider making the recommendation on allocation D under protest, in a sense, maybe finding the appropriate language to say that we accept that that's the current state of the law, but we're looking for change in that regard.
Well, I think we've demonstrated that by a recommendation that this body previously approved to change the statute language that now is going to rest with the input from PJs and SEAC. And then if they agree with us, then we also have to loop in PCLC on it.
Well, just somehow to footnote the recommendation in that respect.
You footnote it to the extent that we bring this recommendation, but to alert the council that we are
right.
perhaps seeking changes to the 2% statute.
Right.
Or just clarify by saying by approving it, we're not
surrendering our request for the, just clarify, we're still working on it. I agree.
Okay, right.
Second motion.
So there's a second by Judge Smith with the understanding that we'll,
right.
In the presentation to the council, we'll advise them that we're working on changes. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. We are going to take our break at this time, and we will resume our meeting at 1 o'clock. So we will go offline, and at 1 o'clock we will come back on. Thank you.